Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a savory sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and crispy hash browns. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Noom is a weight loss program that is built for your individual needs. Taking into account your biology and your psychology, Noom can help you build habits for a healthier lifestyle. Noom's focus is on progress instead of perfection, which means you can still enjoy your favorite foods. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com and check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Your summer is about to get a major upgrade. Get ready to power up your home with Wayfair's Black Friday in July. For 4 days only, July 26th through July 29th, you can get up to 80% off everything home. That's right. Save big on rugs, bedroom and living room updates, home decor, outdoor, and way more. From furniture to faucets, Wayfair has finds for every style and every home. But hurry, these deals won't last long. Need a new patio set to soak up the sun? You got it. How about a sofa that's just right for summer movie marathons? We got you covered. And guess what? We're throwing in free shipping site-wide. Plus, for 12 hours only, Score can't miss flash deals. Just when you thought summer couldn't get any better. Don't miss Wayfair's Black Friday in July. Only from July 26th through 29th. What are you waiting for? Head over to Wayfair.com to start shopping our lowest prices of the summer.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What's up, everybody, and welcome into Commanding the Huddle. I am your host, Ryan Fowler. I know it's been a little bit since our last episode. Enjoyed the 4th of July holiday. I hope you guys did as well, just enjoying the sunshine. I know it's been ridiculously hot. 100, 105, 110, it's been hot out there. But I hope you guys enjoyed the pool, some good food, some good drinks. But today's episode, as you can see by the title, is a little bit different than the usual topics that we like to talk about this time of year. Now, obviously, we're going to get into the weeds here and we're going to pull all the layers back of the Commanders really once training camp gets rolling. And obviously, we get into the preseason. There's so much still to talk about. And I can't wait until pads start cracking. But right now, we are a little bit in that down period to where the NBA season's over, NHL is over. If you're not a golf fan, if you're not following Wimbledon, or you're not a soccer fan watching the Euros or the Copa America tournament, or you're not a baseball fan, there's really not too much going on from a major sport perspective. It's a lot of niche type of sports on right now. And one thing that came to my mind is, of course, the event that kicks off in just a few weeks, July 26th, and that is the 2024 Olympics. That is, of course, being hosted in Paris. And in 2028, a brand new sport is being introduced to the Olympics. Obviously, it's a sport we're familiar with, an American football. But 7-on-7 football is going to be played in Los Angeles when they host the 2028 games in the United States for the first time since Atlanta back in 1996. So obviously, that's 4 years away. But something that came to my mind, it's a little fun topic to just discuss, and I'm making this Commander specific. I could do just the NFC, just the AFC, I could do an entire NFL team. But for the burgundy and gold, what would a 7-on-7 team look like for Washington? So I sat back and looked at it, and I said, you know what? Why not talk some old faces, the headlining faces of some of the guys over the last 20 years on offense and defense for the burgundy and gold, and make a roster for what you would line with on offense, defense for 7-on-7. Now, for those of you out there that are unfamiliar with rules in 7-on-7, it's not your typical 11-on-11 football that we watch every single Sunday in the NFL, or college ball, whatever level. 7-on-7 is more so, there's no linemen. It's more tailored to offense, athletes, hybrid linebackers. You got your corners, your safeties, And then on offense, you got your quarterbacks, your running back, tight end, usually three wide receivers. So 7-on-7. And really, the big boys up front are really just taken out of the game. But it's fun to watch athletes run around. And really, 7-on-7 for high schoolers now in the 7-on-7 circuit is huge for recruiting, for colleges, for seeing really the next up-and-coming wave. I know Overtime has a big 7-on-7 tournament each year. There are tons and tons of tournaments across the country that really allow some of the 4-star, 5-star recruits, the headlining recruits, to play football without pads on, really in shells, if you will, and just play a high level football, but just showcase your athleticism. That's really what 7-on-7 does. And when looking at 2028 and what the United States roster could be, I know right now there are professional 7-on-7 players that are going to have something to say about bringing the NFL guys. But at the end of the day, you know, you're looking at the Justin Jeffersons, the Tyreek Hills of the world, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, those types of guys, Christian McCaffrey. The United States roster should be unbelievable if those guys want to play basically, right, flag football, 7-on-7 type of football there in LA, again, in 2028. But that's 4 years down the road. Whatever happens, whether NFL guys play, whether they don't, that's something to figure out in due time. And if those guys do want to play, I fully expect them to be able to. But for Washington's perspective, I looked at the rosters. I looked at the guys over, the last 20 years. So really, I went back to 2004. Was really my furthest point back that I went to say, I'm going to take guys from this point on. And I'm going to get into a few names that didn't make the cut that I probably would have liked to have had there. But we're going to start on offense, and I'm going to start at quarterback. And if you look at Washington since 2004, the two headlining names at quarterback have been Robert Griffin III and Kirk Cousins. But for me, in a 7-on-7 format to where athletes are prioritized, now, am I sitting here going to saying that Kirk Cousins, right, couldn't compete on a 7-on-7? No, I'm not saying that. But you guys are catching my drift here. As far as just putting together a roster, I got two quarterbacks on this roster. One starting, one backing up. For me, and again, I'm not doing this saying, you know, RG3 hurt or whatever. No, this is all, of course, full health, projecting guys to be full speed. That this is where we're going here. Again, this is a fun exercise. For my roster quarterback, I'm taking Robert Griffin III as my starter and Jaden Daniels as my QB2, one snap away. Two extremely athletic quarterbacks. I know we've talked about it a ton, Jaden Daniels' similarities and his skill set to what Robert offered back in 2012. And I know as I am and you guys are as well, to see what Jaden Daniels is going to be for this offense this year and the years to come. But in 7-on-7, when you can scramble around and make plays behind the line of scrimmage and rip throws to every single depth, I think RG3 and Jaden Daniels would be an excellent 1-2 combo there at the quarterback position. At running back, only one guy that made the cut for me. You could have, I was even thinking about a guy like Chris Thompson over the years that was extremely versatile. I know there was really a love-hate relationship with a guy like Antonio Gibson over the years and just his versatility. I know you guys like Brian Robinson, or even thinking back to the Alfred Morris days or Roy Helu. But there's one guy at the running back spot that if we had to run the ball in any instance, and or also could work out in space and in the screen game, it's Clinton Portis. And I can't go wrong with a guy like Clinton to where I just think back to his first game in Washington against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and he was just so electric. He was so dynamic in his time in D.C. I know there's been a ton of successful running backs in the years of Washington's history as a franchise, but in the last 20 years, I don't think we can look at a back, maybe Alfred Morris in that 1 year, to say that there was a better guy than Clinton Portis. So for me, one running back on the roster, I have to fill the position. Again, 7-on-7 prioritizes guys in space and receiving, so I could make an argument for Chris Thompson, could make an argument for Antonio Gibson, but for me, I am going to take Clinton Portis, I don't think I could really go wrong there with a guy like Clinton, who also had to stay in pass pro. For you guys that are familiar with Clinton Portis, remember him in pass pro, he would knock dudes on their ass. I don't think I've ever seen a better running back in pass pro than Clinton Portis. Remember that preseason game, I believe it was against the Bengals over a decade ago, where he got hurt in that game, where it was a tackle, I think, after an interception where he just laid the guy out and hurt his shoulder, and he missed a few weeks, I think, into the regular season. That was years ago, but just physicality, again, pass pro, Clinton Portis really did it all, and such a dynamic player in his years in D.C. So as of right now, first two positions, quarterback Robert Griffin, the third, running back Clinton Portis. Now let's talk tight end before we get to the three receivers that made the cut for me. And that tight end, it's one of my favorite players that Washington has had really since the turn of the millennium. And that's Jordan Reed at tight end. I think it is crazy to even think that Jordan was actually in the league as soon as 2020. He hasn't played in the last three seasons. You guys know about the injuries. I thoroughly enjoyed covering him day to day when I was in Washington in the late, 2017, 2018, 2019. Seeing him there and during his time there was just one of the most athletic and fluid athletes at the end of the day, regardless of his position, that I've ever seen on a football field up close at his size. Number third round pick out of Florida. Just a dynamic and electric football player. And I wish that the injuries, I wish they didn't exist, especially when it comes to a talent like Jordan Reed and what he was, to where he was so damn electric from the time he stepped out there for Washington to the time he hung him up. Again, spent his last year in 2020 with the San Francisco 49ers. I can't say enough good things about what Jordan Reed was. I mean, I'm just thinking about the game in Philadelphia. Just all these memories that really come to mind, Jordan, that just, he was a matchup nightmare really before the tight end position grew into what it was or what it is today, where we look at Travis Kelce and George Kittle and Mark Andrews and, of course, Darren Waller, even when he was in Las Vegas or with Oakland, before he made the move to the Giants and now retired, the tight end position has really evolved. I mean, look at Brock Bowers, the Raiders' first-round pick this year, and what he's going to present to them. You need weapons, right? Kyle Pitts in Atlanta, top five pick a couple of years ago. They're still trying to figure it out with him. But Jordan Reed was the matchup nightmare of matchup nightmares, and I just, again, wish that he was able to stay even just 85% healthy for a majority of his career, because I think he could have put up numbers that rivaled the top tight ends in the league. And who knows if he would have still been healthy, because he would have been over a decade now in the league here in 2024. But I look at Washington's tight ends right now. I look at a lot of tight ends depth charts across the league, and Jordan Reed would have still probably been tight end one on those rosters. Just how dynamic and electric he was. I really can't say enough good things. And guys at his size, 6'4", 6'5", over 230, 40 pounds, the way he moved was just sensational. And again, wish the best of luck to him. Hope he's doing well in his life after football. But just injuries continue to affect his career. And if I'm choosing a tight end for a 7-on-7 roster for Washington, absolutely, Jordan Reed is the guy here. Over these last 20 years specifically, 100% makes the cut, and there really wasn't another guy that I could look at and say, oh, maybe Chris Cooley, Vernon Davis. No, it just does not compare to what Jordan Reed was at the position. Now, let's talk receivers, guys. Look, over these last 20 years, Washington's had some good guys on the outside, but for me, it comes down to three guys, and it really is a bona fide three that I absolutely love. Each guy, not just as players, but who they are as individuals and what they offered every single game that they were strapped up in the burgundy and gold. But I want to start out by talking about two guys that missed the cut. And they were guys back in the early to mid-2000s in Lavernius Coles and Rod Gardner. Both of those guys in Washington at the same time. Dynamic 1-2 combo, but they did not make the cut for me. I think you guys are going to be happy with the three choices that I made. And I'm going to talk about the first guy, and that is Santana Moss. One of the most underrated receivers, I think, in football in the last 10, 15 years, because he was 5'10". one of the best route runners. His hands, his toughness, it didn't matter what depth he was working at, didn't matter if he was returning kicks, didn't matter if he was returning punts. Santana Moss was and is one of the best players either side of the ball to wear a Washington Redskin uniform in the last a long time, 20, 30 years. I mean, I talked about Coles, I talked about Gardner. I think Santana Moss, you know, up there with the Art Monks, the Charlie Taylors of the world, the receivers that have been historic in Washington, Santana absolutely belongs in that class. He was sensational. I mean, I think about just the comeback against Dallas from Mark Brunell, the three touchdowns. It's just, Santana was everything for the receiving core. No, we didn't have a Randy Moss. We didn't have a Calvin Johnson during those years when those guys really taken over the league, specifically Calvin at that time, or a Larry Fitzgerald out there in Arizona. These superstars of superstars. But every single week, Santana was healthy. Every single week, Santana was a guy that was featured in the offense at every single depth. Again, I mentioned he could hop back and kick, return punts, return kicks. He'd block his tail off. I just, 89 was sensational. And I think clearly, for me, wide receiver one for this offense, if I'm building a 7-on-7 team here for the Olympics. Again, fun exercise. Obviously, this is all for guys in their prime, and I think Santana Moss in his prime would have loved to seen him beside guys, you know, like a Terry McLaurin or a Jahan Dotson or even a Laverne's Coles, Rod Gardner in years past, to where he just, those years where he was in Washington, didn't have a ton of help, elite help, consistently on the outside and mostly taking passes from Mark Brunell or Jason Campbell. So, you know, over the years, Santana was just that consistent presence and just loved watching him play in Washington for the long time that he was here. My second guy is, I think, a guy that you walk down the street and you bring up this kid's name and everybody just has something good to say about him, and that is Pierre Garçon. I think he's someone that lived in those shallow to intermediate areas. You guys remember RG3's first game against the Saints on the road back in 2012, that throw over the middle. Pierre goes over his head, brings it down, and takes it to pay dirt. It was just a beautiful play. Pierre was one of the toughest son of a guns that you're ever going to run into at the receiver position. Obviously, an excellent story. Out of Mount Union, super small school. He wasn't a Bama guy, a Georgia guy, an Ohio State guy. He earned everything. And obviously started his career out with the Indianapolis Colts and Peyton Manning, but obviously made his career, I think evolved his career, what he was in Washington. And I just cannot say enough good things about Pierre to where he could stretch it vertically. He could snap off a route and out leverage a defender. He was just fantastic. I mean, red zone threat, the shallow areas of the red zone to where he can just out muscle a safety or just run by a corner. He did everything well. The catch radius was sensational. Blocked his tail off in the run game. High level route runner. Just tough as nails that you knew on a 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6, a 2nd and 8, you're throwing a number 88 and Pierre Garçon on the outside. You know he's going to bring that thing down wherever he is. You guys remember that touchdown against Philadelphia from Kirk Cousins late in that game where he gets hit from the back and the front and he catches the ball, brings into his body and scores that touchdown there late in the game. Just tough as nails, hell of a football player, hell of a guy that you want in your locker room and was a leader in Washington in his time there. So my first two receivers on this list. Before I even get to the next two guys, again, four receivers, one tight end, one running back, one quarterback is typically the alignment for a typical 7-on-7 offense. So I got four receivers here. First two guys, I got Santana Moss and I got Pierre Garçon. And my next guy was, look, didn't spend a ton of time in Washington, but what he was as a player, what he was really how he changed the game because of his speed, that is DeSean Jackson. And I think he's somebody where you look at him and what he offered as a player and what he forced defenses to do, what he could be for an offense in a 7-on-7 format to where you can't just play 10, 15 yards off. You got to play 20, 25 yards off, deep, deep thirds with your safeties. DeSean's speed was historical. You could really call it generational to where He made fast guys look not fast. Just flat out the length of his strides, the foot turnover, the instincts, the awareness, the playmaking ability down the field, 50, 60 yards down the field was just sensational. And I don't think from a vertical threat perspective, we may not see another guy in the NFL ever be like what DeSean Jackson was. Now, I know it comes with a little bit of a sour taste in the mouth, right, because of his history with the Philadelphia Eagles. But I know you guys remember when Washington went into Philly, he had that long touchdown, and he did the little Eagle thing and then kicked it out. And I know that was a cool moment in Philadelphia for DeSean Jackson. Obviously, his first tenure there did not go over, the ending of it at least, did not go over well. But he was excellent during his time in Washington. And I think he was one of those guys during that time where it was, oh, well, you're bringing in DeSean Jackson now. And, oh, here comes O.J. Atogwe or Albert Haynesworth or Jason Taylor or Adam Archuleta. It's just all these guys came in and it was like, well, here's another free agent signing for Washington. But what DeSean was a really a wide receiver one. And just his presence, whether he was in the concept or in the progression or not, his presence forced teams to consistently live in too high, meaning there's going to be lighter bodies in the box, allowing you to run the football. Again, if he was just on the damn football field because of his speed. And one thing that was just unbelievable about DeSean was whenever you think that he couldn't accelerate more and reach that next speed, he just kicked it into another gear 35, 40 yards down the field to where the common saying, of course, on the outside, guys, in football is if a wide receiver is even with a corner, he's leaving, so he's going past him. But with DeSean, he could be 10 yards in front of the corner, and that guy finally flips his hips and starts to run and accelerate and kick into third, fourth gear. But DeSean just has that fifth, sixth, seventh gear that just, I don't think many guys in the history of the game at the wide receiver position have had. I mean, I could think of one guy in my mind right now that may have that extra gear, and that's Tyreek Hill because he's a world-class sprinter. And I would absolutely classify DeSean Jackson in that type of speed. Now, they are two different types of athletes to where Tyreek's short area quickness and electricity inside a phone booth are unbelievable and really generational at that position and at that size. DeSean's long strides to where his thin, wiry body and ability to just run past people was unbelievable. And again, in a 7-on-7 format, to where I got already Santana and Pierre Garçon, you add DeSean Jackson to that offense with the arm of RG3 and the arm of Jaden Daniels, we're starting to cook with gas here a little bit. And the final guy, guys, on this offense, rounding out the offense before we hop over to the other side of the ball, it's number 17. You guys knew. You guys, there was no secret as far as receivers in the last 20 years, as far as what Terry McLaurin has been for the Commanders since coming in out of Ohio State, whether it's on the field or off the field. What he's been for this franchise, going through the mud of so many quarterbacks, so many different head coaches, offensive coordinators, regimes, now ownership, he has consistently put his helmet on, strapped up every single day, and become one of the elite receivers in football that really goes underlooked and undervalued every single year. And let's hope that now with Jaden Daniels in town and moving forward into 2025, 26, 27, to when Terry really reaches potentially the latter stages of his career. It's crazy to say that, even though right now he is in his prime, but every single year you go on, you're moving past your prime a little bit and getting older and older and older, and the legs and the wear and tear, it does catch up with guys sooner, sometimes sooner than later for some certain guys. But Terry has just been outstanding. I don't need to go into immense detail as far as the route running, the hands, the toughness, the speed, the three-level ability of what he is for this offense, the leadership. I think if you were to build, and what I'm doing here, four receivers that you would want to start for you right away, and you get Santana Moss, Pierre Garçon, DeSean Jackson, and Terry McLaurin in the last 20 years for Washington, that is a pretty damn good list. So let's run through the offense one more time for you guys that came in here late. RG3 and Jaden Daniels at quarterback, Clinton Portis at running back, Jordan Reed at tight end, and then my receivers, Santana Moss, Terry McLaurin, DeSean, Jackson and Pierre Garçon. Of course, my two major absences, of course, are Lavernius Coles and Rod Gardner. So let's hop over to the defensive side of the ball, guys. Now again, big boys really aren't involved here, so I'm not going to be talking about Brian Arakpo's, Ryan Kerrigan, Chase Young, Montez Sweat, Daron Payne, John Allen, the Cornelius Griffin days. I'm not talking about any of those guys. It's mainly focused at linebacker, safety, and corner. So we got two linebackers, two safeties, three corners. We'll start at linebacker first, and for me here, it was really clear decision at linebacker. Now, I did go back and forth with Marcus Washington. You guys remember those days way back. But I made an exception here at the linebacker position for LeVar Arrington. One of, if not the premier linebacker to play in Washington for a long, long, long time. And I'll get to the other name in a second. That's another obvious name as well. But LeVar Arrington out of Penn State was unbelievable. One of the best linebackers in the NFL when he was here. Sideline to sideline, hash to hash. He was more of that throwback build at the linebacker position, right? 260 pounds, give or take a little bit of his playing weight. But he was outstanding. Super athletic. Just was able to diagnose the run in the blink of an eye, then flip his hips in coverage and disrupt timing with tight ends over the middle of the field, or be aware and get it consistently his depth and zone over the middle of the field. I just loved watching LeVar Arrington and also what he was as a personality. For me, growing up in the early 2000s, you know, I was 8, 9, 10 years old, watching the Redskins at the time and seeing what LeVar was alongside Marcus Washington with Michael Barrow in the middle of those defenses. That was really fun to watch. The last era, if you will, of those heavier linebackers, right? The Brian Urlacher types, the Zach Thomases of the world, Keith Brookings, those types of physical, larger linebackers of that time, Ray Lewis, of course, Terrell Suggs in Baltimore, were really the last era of that 250, 60-pound linebackers, to where now you got edge rushers at 235 pounds. You got linebackers like a Jordan McGee at 225 pounds, Frankie Louvu, those types of bodies, where you get these hybrid defenders nowadays. The position has changed so much since the LeVar Arrington types were in the middle of defenses. But if I'm taking one linebacker right now to start opposite of this next guy, I'm taking LeVar Arrington as far as what he was in the early 2000s for Washington. And the next guy is one of, I talked about Santana Moss as super underrated. London Fletcher at the linebacker position out of John Carroll, small school kid, undersized, and he didn't give a damn. Watching London Fletcher compete every single day for the time that he was in Washington, for a long time, years, just love watching him play football, to where we haven't had a lot of enjoyment watching Redskins, Washington football team, Washington Commanders football in the last 10 to 15 years. Flat out, overall as a team. But there have been certain players to where you just know what you're going to get. Think about Ryan Kerrigan in that aspect. You know what you're going to get every single day and every single week from those guys. At the middle of the defense, the physicality, the toughness, the leadership was off the charts from London Fletcher. And I always sit here and talk about the linebacker position to where just because you get a lot of tackles doesn't mean that you're a high-level linebacker. You're in a spot to make a lot of plays, so you're going to have a lot of chances. You have a lot of hypothetical shots at the dartboard to make plays. But London Fletcher consistently was able to put that dart on the bullseye. Consistently at the right spot at the right time. Consistently making one-on-one tackles. How many times we played against the Giants and Brandon Jacobs is coming downhill and London Fletcher sticks his face in the mud and knocks Brandon Jacobs back. Who, by the way, you guys remember that body type in Brandon Jacobs was one of the larger running backs, really the Derrick Henry type of size before Derrick Henry was in the NFL. And London Fletcher consistently stuck his nose in the mud and would knock that type of body back. Or stacking and shedding 6'7", 6'8", type of lineman getting around him, working within the mud, and bringing guys down by their ankles on a 3rd and 5 or a 2nd and 3. He was sensational. And I've had conversations with other people in the industry as far as the top linebackers to ever play in the game. And I know, and I'm not going to sound silly here, not going to be head over heels, but a lot of time we compare and talk about the top players at their position in the league, a lot of that goes into the overall team success. And I know that Ray Lewis has always been talked about as one of the best to ever do it, and I absolutely agree. But when you look at the fundamental numbers of London Fletcher and Ray Lewis, there's a lot of similarities there, and just who they were as players at this similar time to where London was on the Rams, then he was in Washington, where Ray Lewis was in the middle of that Baltimore defense and the success that they had over the years and the players that he had around him, and just overall each year to when they're winning the AFC North and they're winning AFC titles and they're in the Super Bowl, London didn't have that notoriety. But every year he's putting up numbers like a first-team All-Pro that obviously Ray Lewis had tons of in his career. So I'm not sitting here saying London Fletcher is better than Ray Lewis. I'm not going to do that. I hate doing that with players. But as far as linebackers of that time that deserve more notoriety and what London Fletcher was each and every week for Washington to where overall as a whole, they were not a team winning 10-11 games each year, he's absolutely one of the most underrated defenders in football, in my opinion, really, especially in the last 2-3 decades, again, at the linebacker position. So let's jump back to safety, and this was a safety tandem that played together for multiple years, and that is Sean Taylor and LaRon Landry. Now, there's obviously more questions with LaRon more so than Sean, and I'll get into Sean in a minute. But LaRon Landry, you could make the argument for really DJ Swearinger over the years, or if you really, really like the OJ Atagwe edition or Reed Dowdy, but the safety position for Washington really since Sean Taylor and Landry left hasn't been great. I mean, right now, I really do like Derek Forrest. I'm excited about this year. And of course, if you guys have missed any positional group previews or defensive previews, I got a ton of pods in prior episodes for you guys to tune back to and my expectations for this year. And we're also, of course, going to talk about those guys moving into training camp and, of course, in the regular season. But what Sean Taylor was, and then LaRon Landry joining him afterwards, of course, out of LSU, jacked out of his mind. I think Sean Taylor had the chance, of course, before his passing in 2007, had the chance to be one of, if not the premier safeties to ever play the game of football. And I know there's been a ton of great safeties in history, right? Ronnie Lott, Brian Dawkins, just names that pop in my head immediately. But the size, the physicality, the hips, the playmaking ability, he played at every single depth, which was really unique to safeties at that time. It was really the Charles Woodsons of the world, those types of bodies and skill sets that were so unique to the position. And you hear a lot from those guys on, I know NFL Network did a Football Life on Sean Taylor, where you hear from those guys and they talk about what Sean was and his potential if he ever, of course, was able to just avoid what he went through, of course, and that tragedy that he suffered down there in his home in Florida. Sean Taylor, for me, as I've told you guys on prior episodes, he was and is my favorite athlete of all time in any sport, and he always will be. It's just what he was for me as a 10, 11, 12-year-old kid growing up was just unbelievable. Watching him play was really a joy. And coming out of Miami when he wore 36 to when he went to 21, the tape face mask, just a big physical dude that every single time a receiver lined up on the perimeter, I mean, I always think about Terrell Owens when he was in Philly, just dropping balls because Sean Taylor was coming downhill ready to knock your chin strap off, or when he hit Brian Moorman, the punter from Buffalo in the Pro Bowl, one of the most historic clips in football over the last 2-3 decades. Sean Taylor was a historic, generational type of football player that unfortunately, suffered tragedy and it's can't believe that is 17 years ago. Unreal that it's 17 years ago. But what he was, obviously, when he was alive, and what he was for the Washington organization and as a defender was just unbelievable. So when I'm sitting here and I was going through this list of players over the years and we got to the safety spot, there wasn't anybody else even close to getting that number one safety spot. And that's Sean Taylor and, of course, Laron Landry, his former teammate, and what he was as another big physical athletic type of safety, not to the caliber and overall skill set of what Sean was. But Laron Landry had some success as well away from that, you know, Monday night massacre against the Eagles, of course, Michael Vick launching it to DeSean Jackson. Laron Landry really just watching him run past him there with static feet about 25 yards away from the line of scrimmage. So that's a bad memory for Laron Landry, but overall had some good memories in the years. If I'm getting two safeties, I'm definitely bringing those two big boys in there. Now we're going to have a hell of a roof tandem, if you will, again, in Sean Taylor and Laron Landry. So now the three corners. And overall, over these past 20 years or so, there's only three guys that really stand out. And if I had to get a fourth, I probably would have had some trouble in getting a fourth guy for this secondary. But there's three guys. It's D'Angelo Hall, it's Fred Smoot, and it's Sean Springs. Specifically in Springs and Smoot, they were around the early 2000s. Obviously, Smoot still around, does a lot of stuff for the Commanders. You know, he does a lot of stuff on radio as well. Super, just a character. Fred Smoot's a character. But when he's playing, he could absolutely ball. 100% deserved a spot. Sean Springs, I think for me, was one of the more underrated corners in football. Only had one Pro Bowl nod during his career. That just shows you the lack of attention really from the league gave to Washington, especially at that time. And he and Fred played off of each other so well. And then you add in D'Angelo Hall to where I know you guys remember that four interception game against the Chicago Bears in Soldier Field against Jay Cutler was one of the more, I don't know if we'll ever see that again at the cornerback position, four picks. I mean, some guys maybe get one or two in a game. You get two, that's a heck of a game. But four was an unbelievable day and one of the more historic production perspective days I've ever seen at the corner spot. And D'Angelo, you know, when he was in Oakland, obviously he's in Atlanta, and then came to Washington and was as good as you could ever hope for. So that is my defense, rolling out 7-on-7 group, running through it again at linebacker, London Fletcher and LeVar Arrington. At safety, Sean Taylor and Laron Landry. And at corner, three guys, D'Angelo Hall, Fred Smoot, and Sean Springs. So that's going to do it for today's episode, guys. Hope you enjoyed. Definitely a little bit of a different type of episode this week. It's not just commander specific, diving in training camp, diving into the rookie class or expectations for year two of a class or year three of a class or free agent additions or anything like that. We got a lot more to get into, of course, as training camp quickly approaches. We got football right around the corner. Pads are going to be strapped up here real soon. But with the Olympics just a couple weeks away, football coming to the Olympics in Los Angeles, in the United States in 2028. There's already been a lot of talk as far as a lot of the NFL superstars potentially wanting to join. I talked about Mahomes, Lamar Jackson at the top, Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, the Jalen Waddles of the world. Could we potentially see a commander at that point in time hop on offense or defense and play? We will see, but it's a really fun exercise when looking at the NFL today, what 4 years down the road could be as far as the roster that aligns in LA to where there's nobody in the world as far as making a world roster that would ever come close to what the United States could put, obviously, on the football field. But for Washington's perspective, thought I'd take you through just a little bit of exercise here today as far as what I would build. Over the last 20 years, you know, we could have very easily done the history of Washington, and we could have thrown in the Art Monks of the world or slinging Sammy Ball at quarterback. We could have thrown Doc Walker at tight end. You know, we could do all types of different things. But just in the last 20 years, hope you guys enjoy. That is my team on offense and on defense. Going to go through it for you guys one more time. We got RG3 and Jaden Daniels at quarterback, Clinton Portis at running back, Jordan Reed, Santana Moss, Terry McLaurin, Pierre Garçon, DeSean Jackson as my tight end and receivers. And then on defense, we got London Fletcher, LeVar Arrington as the big boys in the middle. Sean Taylor, Laron Landry at safety, and at corner, D'Angelo Hall, Fred Smoot, and Sean Spring. So again, hope you guys enjoyed your 4th of July holiday. We'll have an episode out for you guys next Thursday. Hope you guys always enjoyed. We're on every podcast platform. I'm on X, if you don't follow me there already, at _RyanFowler. And as always, my work can be found at Bleacher Report and the Draft Network. So thank you guys as always for tuning in. We'll talk to you soon. I'm Ryan Fowler, and this is Commanding the Huddle.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a savory sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and crispy hash browns. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. So start your free trial of SiriusXM today. Visit SiriusXM.com/believe.